Oh, we see the wisdom of Shlomo here too. Yes. I'm going to come back to that in chapter 3 when we talk about God giving him wisdom, because Shlomo already has wisdom.
Yeah, but he's very wise the way he handled this.
Yes, indeed. I don't know if you're signed up for it, but I'm going to actually discuss it on Wednesday morning. My Wednesday morning series, The House of David, my opening topic of the wisdom of Shlomo. But, well, we're going to end up talking about it in this series also. But, nonetheless, it's going to be, that's going to be a theme there. All right. We're up to chapter 2. Chapter 2. Everything happens in chapter 2. Take a look at the outline I gave you on the source sheet. You begin with David's last instructions to Shlomo, which is a way to summarize a remarkable set of instructions. He begins very nicely with, you should serve God and be careful with God's commands. And then he continues to say, there was this general Yoav who did terrible things. Don't let him die of old age. Oh, Barzillai HaGiladi, he was great. When I was running away from Avshalom, he was really helpful to me. Take care of his kids. And there's this fellow Shimi ben Gera who cursed me when I was on the run in that revolt by Avshalom. Yeah, don't let him die in his sleep either. Those are David's last instructions to Shlomo. Then you get a couple of sentences of transition. David dies, Shlomo becomes king, and then Adoniyahu comes up with a plan, foiled by Bathsheba, to take the throne. After that, Shlomo gets on his father's instructions. First, actually before his father's instructions, he dismisses Eviatar. Eviatar, the last member of the city of Nov that Shaul had wiped out. So Eviatar has already lost the status of Kohen Gadol earlier, back in Shmuel. But now he is dismissed and sent home altogether. He has Yoav executed. Shimi is sent home and then executed. So Eviatar is sent home. Yoav is executed. Shimi is sent home and executed. So we're going to have to talk about all of this. I'm not answering questions about it during the summary. The summary is just a summary. Okay. The themes and messages we're going to see here, David's attempt to shape the reign of Shlomo. David is going to shape this new monarchy. Royal succession, the dangers that Shlomo is facing. The wisdom of Bathsheba is going to be on full display in our chapter. And you're going to see Shlomo's royal strategy. He's developing an identity of his own as he deals with the various figures. We have a lot of questions that we're going to need to address. As I said to you in the beginning of the series, we're not going line by line. There's too much here. But here are some questions that I'd like to address. First of all, if David wants Yoav and Shimi killed, why didn't he do it himself? He knows how. That's not the problem. So why didn't he do it? That's number one. Number two, you're really going to execute Yoav? Yoav was loyal to David throughout. You may not like his methods, but Yoav is a loyal general. Take a look at the way Abarbanel frames this in source number 12. If you ever learn Abarbanel inside the text, not just, you know, the summary pieces that we do here, but if you ever read Abarbanel inside, he likes to begin a section with a whole bunch of questions. And then he goes through the section and he provides you with ideas. So here is question 5 in the beginning of the book of Malachim. And he says, "Sheyoav hayala David eved ne'eman ve'etzem me'atzamav u'basar mi'besaro." Yoav was a loyal servant to David, and bone of his bone and flesh of his flesh, meaning their family. We will discuss that. But Yoav is David's nephew. Let's not forget that. Va'asa al dvar kavod shemo ma'asim gedolei ma'ala. He did wonderful things for David in David's name, for David's own honor. So why are you returning his good behavior with bad? And by the way, this is your last instruction? When David is on his deathbed, I would have thought that he would want to issue pardons, not, you know, order executions. The imno marshaha Yoav ben Maves. And if you'll tell me that Yoav is liable for death because he killed Avner, because he killed Amasa, as we're going to see, Hine yikshema od lamalo ha'enisho David b'sha'as ha'masa. Then as we asked before, so why'd you wait so long? Why didn't you kill him before? Either kill him when he did what he did wrong, right after he killed Avner, you should have killed Yoav, or at some point within your 40 years on the throne, you could have done this. He killed Avner 37 years ago. Where have you been? So that's a major question to address. But that's not the only one. I told you that David tells Shlomo that Shimi ben Gera should die. Go back to Shmuel Bet, please. Chapter 19, sentence 24. I gave you the reference in source 13, so you can see the pasuk number there as well. Shmuel Bet, chapter 19, sentence 24. This is when Shimi ben Gera came to David to apologize for having cursed him. Look what David says. Vayomer hamelech el Shimi lo samus. David says to Shimi, you shall not die. Vayishava lo hamelech. And the king swore that he wasn't going to kill him. So this is a problem too. And then we have other problems. Bathsheba and her response to Adoniyahu's request. Why did she take his request so seriously? Why did Shlomo dismiss Eviatar? He dismisses Eviatar from service as a Kohen. What's that about? David did not order that. Is Shlomo really executing Shimi for a minor trespass? I'll tell you right now, those who haven't already read the chapter. If you haven't read the chapter, first of all, please read it. But it'll make sense of everything as we're going through it. But Shlomo is going to tell Shimi, go home and stay home. Shimi is going to stay home for 3 years. After 3 years, he's going to have his avadim run away, and he goes to retrieve them, and then Shlomo's gonna say, oh, you left the house, that's it, off with his head. Like, really? Was it just a trap? What was that? And finally, who is this fellow, Benayahu ben Yehoyada, who keeps carrying out the executions on behalf of Shlomo? Who is he, and what does it teach us about Shlomo himself? All of that in chapter 2. Yes, so Rebecca.
Fair also to say, when you say go home, one doesn't necessarily think of that as being so literal. Almost like, go mind your own business. I mean, I would have thought.
So let's look at the psukim when he actually says it to Shimi. Right? It's in chapter 2, specifically in sentence 36, 37. He is pretty clear. Sentence 36. He said, build a house for yourself in Yerushalayim and live there. Don't go here and there. And on the day you leave, if you cross Nachal Kidron, know that you shall die and your blood will be on your head. So it wasn't just like what he said to Adoniyahu, go home. He was pretty explicit. So we're going to have to talk about all of this. Yes, Susan.
Are we also going to talk about the king that's supposed to have clean hands, killing?
Yeah. I mean, that's part of this conversation. Yes, Ricky.
It's very confusing.
Yeah. Ricky, what were you going to say? No, you just muted yourself.
I was reading verse number 5K.
Yeah.
And at the end it says, Vasita bechomotecha velotorin.
Say about
Shalom Shaul. Is that a way of saying, don't let him live to an old age?
It sounds like it, yes. But again, we're going to talk about it. But yes, that is what it sounds like. So the first thing I want to note here is that the opening of our chapter, David's instructions to Shlomo, are the Haftorah to Parshas Vayechi. So God willing, we will get through this chapter, or at least the first part of the chapter, by the time we get to Parshas Vayechi. Actually, Ralph Bag, I think, did I put on the sheet? No. I brought you from Abarbanel. But let me go in order. The reason why it's the Haftorah for Vayechi is because Vayechi includes Yaakov's last instructions and blessings to his kids. So we're juxtaposing Yaakov giving his instructions and David giving his instructions. And it makes sense to do so. What I brought you from Abarbanel in source number 14 is just his point that we have a long tradition in Tanakh of patriarchs giving their children last instructions before they pass away. I'll read out my English translation quickly in the interest of time. The practice of instructions from elders before they die was always the practice of the holy ancestors, as we find of Yitzchak that he wanted to bless Esav before dying. Yaakov also instructed his sons at the end of his days. Our master Moshe blessed Israel before his death. Yoshua rebuked Israel before his death. And he says, I think the reason is from the perspective of the deceased who instructs and the perspective of the living who are instructed. As far as the dead who instruct, because at the time of his death, he will find himself of pure mind and clear understanding. And he quotes Aristotle to that effect, that as long as the physical energies wane, intellectual energies become stronger. And he says, the Rambam said the same thing in the Moreh Nevuchim. So in other words, it's good for a person to give advice close to his death, because at that point, he's less distracted by the physical, and his intellect is strong. And he says, it's also...
Would you call this a win?
What?
Would you call this a win?
I'm going to come back to your question in a moment. And the and in terms of the living, who are receiving instructions, it's valuable to do it because when a person instructs his son due to impending death, the son faces a greater legal obligation to fulfill what we call mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames. There's a mitzvah fulfilling the words of the deceased. Now, Ruchama asked if this is what we call a will. So there is an old concept in Judaism of writing what we call a tzava'a. And a tzava'a includes an ethical will. And yes, that is what this is. I gave a shiur last night on halachic wills in terms of financial wills. You were there. And I mentioned in the beginning of the shiur of Shlomo Kluger, I think it was, who said that one should write a will at the age of 50. The rationale for 50 being that, that in Parshas Bahar we say that at the age of 50, like Yovel, property returns to where it was, one returns to his estate. But also, we connect it to, I didn't mention this last night, the fact that we're taught ben chamishim le'etza, when someone is at the age of 50, they're able to give proper counsel. So there's that. I don't recommend that people wait till they're 50. People should actually take care of a will earlier for a whole host of reasons. But that's just a little bit of a side note. Yes, Moish. You're muted.
I just want to offer something small, which is that the answer to all the questions you asked about Parak Beit is the last half hour of Godfather number one.
Thank you. I'm going to leave it to people to watch the movie, but I'm going to go a little further here. Sorry. The idea here of associating what David does with what Yaakov does makes sense as a long-standing practice among our leaders. However, I will also go back to something that we've discussed before, which is the Yaakov and David associations. We've said that there's a Yaakov side to David. There's a Yaakov side, there's an Esav side. So the Yaakov side to David is reflected in the fact that he does before his death what Yaakov did before his death. So in order to understand where we're going, and Moish, the Godfather reference is valuable, but I'm going to go in a little bit of a different direction with it. In order to know anything about this, you really need to know more of Tanakh to know the backstories behind all of these instructions that David is giving. So I gave you some references on the source sheet in source number 15 for Yoav. We're not going to go through them inside because that will take too long, but I'm going to tell you what's in them and suggest that you actually take the time at some point to look it up, because a lot of the questions that people are asking and a lot of the answers I'm going to want to give are really contingent on knowing the story well. So if you come back next week without having read the chapter and without having read the backstory, some of it's just not going to make sense. So keep that in mind, please. But in terms of my bullet points for Yoav, first of all, as I already mentioned, he is David's nephew. His mother, Tsruya, is David's sister. So the so that's one important piece to know. The second important piece to know is that Yoav is part of a dangerous set of siblings. Yoav has, and I gave you references there again on the sheet, Yoav has two brothers. One of them is named Asael, and one of them is named Avishai. Asael, if you remember the story, in Shmuel Bet, chapter 2, after Shaul dies, Shaul leaves behind a son, Ishbosheth. Ishbosheth claims the throne, even as David is claiming the throne. The people of Yehuda accept David. The people of the northern kingdom of Yisrael, it's not a kingdom yet, they accept Ishbosheth, Shaul's son. There is some kind of a war game that goes on between Shaul's men and David's men. And David's men are led by the general Yoav, and Asael, Yoav's brother, is part of that effort. Shaul's men, or Ishbosheth's men, are led by a general Avner. And Yoav's brother Asael runs after Avner, the general, trying to kill him. And Avner says to him, I don't want to kill you. Go away. Go attack somebody else. And he tries multiple times. And Asael refuses to listen until finally Avner turns around and kills him, because Asael is out of his league trying to attack Avner. But the point is, Asael trying to kill Avner, you have Yoav, who is going to kill Avner, and is also going to kill two other very important people before he's done. And then you have Avishai. Avishai, when Shimi ben Gera tries to curse David, Avishai twice demands the opportunity to execute Shimi, and both times David says, leave him alone, don't do it. The Avishai needs to be talked down. So the three brothers, who are the sons of Tsiruyah, are dangerous people, and David identifies them that way. David says, these people are dangerous people. Like, that's the way he looks at them. Yoav, for his part, is David's loyal general. In Shmuel Bet chapter 2, he is David's general against Ishbosheth's men. In Shmuel Bet chapter 10, chapter 11, chapter 12, he fights wars for David against Ammon and Aram. In Shmuel Bet chapter 14, he actually tries to arrange peace between David and Avshalom. In Shmuel Bet chapter 20, he pursues Sheva ben Bichri, who has revolted against David. In Shmuel Bet chapter 24, he does a census at David's command. David tells him what to do, and he does. However, it doesn't always work out that way. It doesn't always work out that way. And that brings us to Yoav's crimes. The first one that I listed there, Shmuel Bet chapter 3, is when Avner, who had been general for Ishbosheth, abandons Ishbosheth to come to David. Yoav kills Avner. That's number one. After David has already accepted Avner, Yoav kills him. Number two, and perhaps most painful, Avshalom, David's son, revolted against him. David orders his forces, do not kill Avshalom. At one point, Avshalom is vulnerable. There's a soldier there. Yoav says, kill him. The soldier refuses because David said don't. And so Yoav kills David's son Avshalom himself. And then third, Yoav kills a third man by the name of Amasa. Amasa was also a general who had come over to support David, and Yoav executes him. All three times against David's wishes. So this is who we're talking about when we talk about Yoav.
Why didn't David have him executed
early? So that's one of the questions we asked, which we're going to get to. Right now, I'm just giving background. Yes, Rebecca.
Oh, no. When this is over, I'll talk to you just a little about Shimi, what I was thinking.
Okay. Well, Shimi's backstory is going to come up next week. But the Yoav, as part of this family of the sons of Tzeruya, is a genuinely dangerous man. There's actually, I'll tell you this, I'm going to see, we'll see this later, but we're in our last minute. Look at chapter 3 for just a second. Shmuel Bet, chapter 3, sentence 39. This is David speaking to his men very, very early on, after Yoav killed Avner. Chapter 3, sentence 39. David says, Va'anochi hayom rach u'meshuach melech. I am soft. Right? The same word he would use for Shlomo later. Today I am soft, just anointed as king. V'ha'anashim ha'ele b'nei Tzruya kashim mimeni. These guys, the sons of Tzruya, those three brothers, they are too tough for me. Yishalem Hashem le'osei ha'ra'a k'ra'aso. Let God punish Yoav for what he did. So that tells you a little bit about his decision about Yoav, but we'll have to see much, much more about it. I'm just showing you right now, he's intimidated by Yoav, and that's something not to be forgotten. Next week, God willing, we will continue with backstory on Barzillai and Shimei, and there's a lot more to talk about. So thank you very, very much. And thank you for that nice note in the chat.
The only thing I was going to say about Shimei, and I didn't have a chance. I mean, I did look up Nachal Kidron because I was trying to figure out why he chose that. And maybe we'll figure that out after. But when Shlomo, you know, calls him to task afterwards, he doesn't mention Nachal Kidron. He just says, "I told you not to go out at all." So he also kind of changes the. Anyway,
it's true.
There seems to be more, but I didn't have. I didn't look up the factory. Anyway, looking forward. Thank you again.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody.
Can you say that again, what it is you want us to read, the whole chapter?
I Tanakh, basically. But if you had to pick a specific part...
the whole chapter?
I definitely think it's worth reading the whole chapter, yes. Definitely think so.
But we have homework.
All right. Be well.